We have six cases on the docket this morning, four for oral argument. Appellants often want to reserve a few minutes. We'll see how that goes. It doesn't always work out. Depends on our questioning. You only have two of us questioning, so maybe there's a better chance of reserving time. So we'll start with 22-5060, U.S. versus Morrow. Mr. Miller.
May it please the court, Benjamin Miller on behalf of Earl Morrow. Here, three errors occurred that both improperly strengthened the government's case while weakening the defense. First, when all the reasons offered by the government to admit a substantial amount of other crimes and bad act evidence were either misstatements of the testimony or pure propensity, the court's decision to admit all of it was error. Second, when brothers' statements were filled with incriminating details, the court's decision to keep them all from the jury undermined the defense. And third, despite the prosecutor knowing all charges against brother had been dropped, his closing argument led the jury to believe otherwise, an error that was never corrected. These errors either individually or cumulatively require reversal. I could start with the bad act evidence. To admit bad act or other crimes evidence, you first need a proper purpose. Here, there was no proper purpose. The entire reasons offered by the government to admit this evidence were really fell into two categories. First, they said we need it to rebut his defense, his testimony that he said he downloaded these images by mistake or because of a virus. Mr. Morrow, at no point in his testimony, says he downloaded the images by mistake. He explicitly denied that it was a virus. At page 371, he's asked, have you ever downloaded child pornography? No. Have you ever distributed child pornography? No. He's asked, how do these images get on your computer? He says, I am unaware. He says, so you don't think it's a virus? That's a question from the prosecutor at page 407. So you don't think it was a virus? No, I don't think it was a virus. And so that basis, it just never happened. His testimony was he didn't do it. He wasn't responsible for it. And then the other reasons the government really wanted this was for propensity.
Well, counsel, in their brief, doesn't the government argue that the 404B category of showing knowledge would be a proper basis?
Well, I think two things. One, yes, knowledge is the basis, but this only shows knowledge if you draw the propensity argument, which is what they wanted this jury to do. They say at page 35 of their motion, what these images show, Mr. Morrow downloads cartoon child pornography, then he's likely to do the same with child pornography of real children. That's a propensity argument.
Well,
that's not a
counsel,
knowledge argument.
On this knowledge argument, mm-hmm. and they do make that argument in their brief, if I'm reading it correctly. If Mr. Morrow insisted that he didn't know how the child pornography was downloaded on his computer, why doesn't the fact that there was anime evidence, and he does discuss in his testimony the use of the Horrible Subs website, why doesn't that go to show that he did know how to download with one of the torrent apps, and why wouldn't that be appropriate under 404B?
Because I think there's a significant leap from, I think, Your Honor's question, which is also similar to, I think, what the court says at page 386, versus what we would need to make this a proper purpose. All Mr. Morrow says is, I download cartoons, I use these torrents, I use these sites. Anime is a massive category of movies. Torrent sites, you can download all sorts of images. There was no proof, evidence, that he actually did this. It just was on his computer just the same way these other things were on their computer. And so there's no reason to believe he downloaded those animated images any more than there was to believe he downloaded the actual images.
But I think maybe this is more of a limited point that the government was trying to make, which is to show that at least he knew would have known how to do it. I mean, he testified he has no idea how the child porn got there, and the government as I understand it, was trying to show, well, at least he knows how to do it. Now, that doesn't, to your point, maybe that doesn't get you to the, to that he actually did do it, but knowing how to do it is a step in the direction of actually doing it. Why wouldn't that be relevant, and why wouldn't that be 404B?
So I think the idea that this shows he knows how to download material is such a...
Well, not just download material, but with one of the torrent apps.
But I don't think that is not such a unique specialty, unique way to download images. If you want to download music, movies, whatever, people use torrents. People use torrents for all different types of downloading.
Well, I'm not saying it proves their case, but the bar for relevance is relatively low under Rule 401. And if they can put this type of inquiry under the knowledge heading in 404B, why isn't that enough?
Because I don't know what it's proving knowledge of, that he knows in
theory
how to...
That he knows how to use the type of app that at least in the context of this case was used to download child pornography somewhere.
But then I think it still requires, to make this relevant legally, you still then need another leap to, he knows how to download images. This shows he knew how to download these exact images because he downloaded a different type.
Well, right.
That gets the propensity problem.
I take your
problem.
Point that it doesn't ultimately prove their case, but, you know, brick by brick, we say sometimes when it comes to putting the evidence together. Let me just switch on one other thing on this particular point, which is there's this opening the door concept that comes into play here. Where I was having a little trouble with that is if in fact the door was opened, and maybe you don't think it was, but if it was opened, is this discussion of the intricacies of 404B even necessary? I mean, isn't opening the door typically a situation where one side elicits evidence that, in fairness, allows the other side to go into the same category of evidence, irrespective of what the rules of evidence say, other than maybe the relevance rules?
Yes, if the door was opened, we wouldn't need to go through all the 404B steps. But the door was not opened. You know, Mr. Morrow, again, he denies downloading child pornography. He denies possessing it. He denies distributing it. He says he downloads cartoons. The prosecutor then changes those words to go to the court and says he's now said there is a virus or he downloaded it by mistake. That was their basis for opening the door, that he said there was a virus or he did it by mistake. He absolutely does not say either of those things. And so it was a mischaracterization of the testimony. And so the door wasn't open. And so we do need to do the 404B factors. And if I come back to your Honor's point about this might not prove the case, but it might be a brick in the chain and their wall to prove their case. When one of those bricks requires you to make that propensity leap, that is what this court said in Commands we don't permit. And they use the hypothetical of a man who backs his car into his wife. And he had a prior conviction of assaulting her. And what this court there said, the assault wouldn't come in to dispute his lack of mistake because it only shows you would likely believe he did these things because he did them before. And even if this might have minimal relevance, which I don't think it had any relevance beyond propensity, but even if it does, we still have the massive prejudice prong to deal with here. And when the government here didn't just ask Mr. Morrow, isn't it true we found animated images of child pornography on your computer? They didn't just stop there. They then called a completely separate witness who testifies for pages, who introduces hundreds of images. They then three separate times in closing argument come back to these animated images. And when they're talking about these animated images, they're not talking about it for knowledge, like Your Honor was talking about it. They're talking about it. They want the jury to believe that anyone who would have animated images would have the real images. Page 452. Our case is further strengthened by the hundreds of animated images that are found on his devices. 457. Look at all those animated images. 470. We showed you all those animated images. He's got a type. They were telling the jury to convict him of possession of real pornography because he had...
Of course, there was a lot of evidence of real pornography in the case, correct? So let's assume you're right on your 404B argument. Where's the harmful error in the face of, 4,000 child pornography images? And not only that, but the checklist of child porn sites that came into evidence. How do you get past that on harmless error?
I actually don't think harm... I think these number of images, if you're someone... For me, when I first read this case, I haven't done a case like this before. I was like, that seems like a shocking amount of images. But we actually know it really isn't. In the world of child pornography cases, 4,000 images is not a staggering amount of images. We had the report from the Sentencing Commission from 2021 that in non-production cases, the mean number of images was 5,000. And so whether you had one image or 500, when you have to prove knowledge of possession of something that's on your computer that you very well may never see if it's there and you didn't put it there. The fact that there may have been other things there that he never see does nothing to show knowledge other than, look at all this evidence, he must have possessed it.
What about the checklist?
I'm not sure what, I don't understand the checklist.
Didn't they recover a checklist connected to him of child porn sites?
I may be misremembering. I'm not remembering any a specific checklist on that. But I could have that wrong, Your Honor.
So could I. We'll have to check the record.
And I'm sure that the government will correct. If I could just use a quick minute to talk quickly about the other two issues. On the idea of the brother's statements not being admitted, the court wouldn't admit them because they didn't believe they were sufficiently corroborated. And what I think the court did here, I'll point to the Lozado case, is it substituted, do I believe these were clearly true, which is really for a jury to decide, versus was there enough corroboration? And here, there was enough corroboration for five reasons I like to point. One, he had access to...
What's our standard review here? It's pretty much in the discretion of the court, isn't it?
Yes, this is a discretionary call. But I think the court got it wrong because I think it was focused on did it believe it was true versus the jury question. And so
To say sufficiently corroborated requires some sort of determination of the convincingness of the evidence.
Yeah.
And there were all sorts of earmarks of a brother trying to protect the defendant. And I'm sorry, I don't see how the judge can't think about that issue and saying there's just not enough here. I'm not going to.
Well, on the brother point, I'd point to page 157 of the record of the brother's statements to the police where he says specifically, I would not just say something to let somebody off the hook.
Yes.
And to think someone would take the blame for a crime like possessing child pornography that comes with massive penalties, that comes with terrible stigma, he had access to all the devices. There was evidence connecting him to child pornography, including the evidence in the search warrant. His statements are filled with not just broad pronouncements to protect his brother. His statements are filled with details of someone who would have that knowledge we were just talking about. He says he's not trying to protect his brother, and he was actually charged. And so given all of that, and given the importance of allowing someone to present a defense, what the Supreme Court said in Chambers about not mechanically applying rules of evidence to interfere with someone's right to a defense, there was enough corroboration here to meet the standard, and these images should have been admitted. And I just really quick want to add on the closing argument issue, that this was really an error by the prosecutor.
It was clearly an error, but it helped.
Yes.
The defendant.
Because.
The defendant, not the prosecution.
It does not, when part of your defense is my brother may be responsible, and in one fell swoop, you're telling the jury, don't worry about the brother, we're going to get him next. When you know that's not true, that wiped away the defense in one quick statement.
I think they're showing that they found the brother credible. It indicates they found the brother credible when he confessed, and they're going after the brother too. That helps the defendant, does it not?
No, I think it hurts because what you're telling the jury is that the United States of America thinks both these brothers are responsible together, not separately. and we're going to get him next, don't you worry. And the prosecutor knew that wasn't true. That's information uniquely within the prosecutor's mind that the jury has one reason to believe they're true and nothing to refute it. And that was why that was so harmful, because it gutted the defense in one quick statement. And I will reserve my final 10 seconds for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Jeff Gallants for the appellee on behalf of the United States. I did not try the case below. I would like to start, I want to get to this issue of mistake, but I want to start with an apology. Our discussion in our brief of the standard of review with respect to the third issue, the closing argument, while we properly identified the standard of review as plain error, which is correct, it was not a model of clarity and arguably misleading on page 34 when discussing harmless error. As the Tenth Circuit has made very clear in cases like Christie and Fleming, when in cases like this one, when the defendant did not object to the statement at trial, the burden is on the defendant to show, number one, the statement is plainly improper, and number two, the burden's on the defendant to prove the statement affected his substantial rights. So I apologize for any confusion that that may have brought. This issue about mistake, the judge didn't make a mistake about mistake. There wasn't collective amnesia about what the testimony is. Mr. Miller is exactly right what the defendant said during his direct, but during his cross, he said a variety of things that gave the court and everyone in the courtroom a fair inference of that he may have been referring to a virus. Now just take the court through it. At first, on page 381, he's asked, have you ever walked in on your computer just doing all kinds of stuff by itself? And he said, yes, sir. Okay, does it automatically by itself, huh? No, sir, it's usually done by some means other than myself hacking. And then he says the one file they're talking about wasn't on his computer. Then he says on the next page, it's my testimony, the computer has been fed false information. And then is the colloquy about 404B analysis. And then after that, the defendant gives, so I think based on those very vague and confusing statements, it's fair for the court and the government to believe he's talking about some sort of virus. After the colloquy.
Well, why does that constitute mistake? Maybe it's a definitional debate, but did he ever say in his testimony that the child porn must have been on the computer due to his own inadvertence? That seems like more of a mistake.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's one way of thinking about mistake. The court thought about mistake in a different way. On page 387 of the record, the court in its colloquy says, I'm concerned by the fact the defendant has now taken the position these things were on his devices that he didn't place there. In other words, that there is a mistake on his computer. And then Ms. Gullickson, the defense attorney, agrees with that conception because she says, I think even under 404, it still has to pass 403, all right? So while it could be used to show a lack of mistake, it's overly prejudicial. And then a couple pages later, the court again, and the court, it's really a textbook with respect to both the 804 and the 404B analysis. The court is very thorough in its analysis of the rules and the prevailing 10th Circuit case law and thoughtfully exercises its discretion. But then later on, the court's trying to clarify the defense's position. It says, Ms. Gullickson, the defense attorney, they've identified a 404B purpose, and that is the absence of mistake or accident. So I'm not even sure, I want to be sure I understand your position. Does the defendant agree that the first two parts of the test from Burgess in the evidence offered for a purpose, a proper purpose, is the evidence relevant? Are those behind us, and now we're on to 403, the third part of the test? And then the defense attorney says, Your Honor, I don't think I can say that I agree it's relevant. Again, implying that she's admitting that this understanding that everyone has that the defendant may be arguing some sort of mistake in this way the court's using it is a proper purpose. And then later on, after the colloquy, the defendant goes on to say, he at one point says these files weren't even on his computer. And then he says, I'm unaware how they got on my computer, but I don't know that they were there prior to February 20. Then on page 408, he says, I believe it was done not maliciously, but by an outside party. And then he says someone either hacked in or had physical access to do it. So he didn't just say there's lack of knowledge. And then even if we are troubled by the court's
use... Well, that last part of it, that's exactly what he's saying. He doesn't know how they got there.
Well, if I can say, I was going to finish up, Your Honor, regardless of how we think about the mistake, when the court instructs the jury on the limiting purpose, they use lack of knowledge, which is exactly what the defense here and at trial were arguing. So even if we say the discussion of mistake was somehow mistaken, the jury was properly instructed twice, both when the testimony came in and then in the instructions.
Well, am I reading your brief incorrectly? It seems to me that your brief argues knowledge rather than absence of mistake.
Yes, Your Honor. I was just responding to what counsel was bringing up that the court...
I know. I'm asking you another
question. Yes, it was that it went to knowledge, both in terms, as your court described it, in terms of his use of the software, but also the anime is in the same place, stored in the same place that the child pornography is, under web video folders. So that was an important part of the government's argument, that look at this anime is in the same place as the child pornography. And as we go to prejudice, Your Honor, it's the jury doesn't know what the medium number of child pornography images are in a certain case, but they were exposed to very graphic child pornography, real actual children being sexually abused in very graphic terms. They saw videos and they saw pictures. So the idea that some cartoons, although disturbing, could somehow make it more prejudicial than the actual abuse of real children that the jury saw on a number of occasions, it doesn't show any prejudice. And just to answer one question, Your Honor made the issue about the rebuttal issue on the 404B. How that came up was pre-trial, they argued the 404B issue, and this is beginning on page 197 to 207. When the court was making its ruling on 207, the district court basically said the government could only bring up the 404B evidence in rebuttal, and the government didn't push back on that. So the whole idea that court actually says, in terms of the argument that it's admissible under rebuttal prong of 404B, I think you have to wait for the government, for the defendant, to present one of those exceptions as a defense. So it came up in the pretrial hearing, and the government and the court sort of agreed this would be a rebuttal issue. And that's where that came from. With respect to the, I just want to make a mention about the 804 issue, that Corey, the brother's statement is only relevant if it's linked to the evidence against Earl, the defendant. And at the initial part of this, and this is another example where the court exercised its discretion in a very thoughtful way, there was almost a 20-page discussion in the transcript about this issue beginning at about 327. And at first, the defense didn't even want to introduce specific statements. They were just going to ask for general questions. And the statements they wanted to introduce are these very vague statements that just says, I'll take it and put it on me, that sort of thing. The agent several times asked for details, and Corey, the brother, would never supply any details. So in that sense, there's nothing to corroborate. So the defense can't raise the issue of there's sufficient corroboration because what he said was so vague, it couldn't be corroborated. The court then looked at all the other statements he did make that arguably were against his interests. But those statements don't implicate anything that was actually at issue at trial. He said he would see some images, child pornography, and delete them right away. He never says First of all, there's no evidence he had access to the defendant's password-protected laptop or desktop, where or the flash drive that the defendant kept on his keychain that had over 3,000 files of child pornography. But Corey never says that I downloaded and stored child pornography on my brother's password-protected devices. And that is what this case was all about. So there wasn't anything to corroborate that he said that the evidence that was actually at issue in this trial. Unless there's other questions, I'll cede the rest of my time.
Can I just ask you one thing about the not yet comment in closing argument? And this may come back to what you said at the very beginning, so I apologize if we're plowing the same ground. But I think your brief said that the not yet comment was harmless.
Yes.
Are you conceding that Mr. Morrow showed the statement was plainly improper under the plain error standard?
No, Your Honor, but given we messed up the, using a legal term, messed up a bit the standard of review, I don't know where that puts us. I think from the context of the statement, it's not plainly improper. I think it was an artfully said, and we, in our brief, says it was a misstep. So we're left with that because we didn't argue it was plainly improper because we didn't use the right standard of review. We're where we are, Your Honor. But I think in the context of what he was saying, he linked it in terms of as the judge will instruct you and referring to those instructions where you only look at the defendant. You don't look at if other people can be guilty or not. It was an artful way, admittedly, to refer to the judge's instruction. Otherwise, the most plain reading, as Judge Hartz pointed out, is actually to the benefit of the defendant, that the brother very well may have some culpability. And assuming the prosecutor did not do that, which I think is a fair assumption, it was improper. I don't think the defendant carried their burden to show it's plainly improper. The defense, in their brief, they don't argue the proper standard either. It's the plain view, the plain error generally. They don't articulate it as indicated in the Christie or Fleming case either. So in that sense, they don't meet their burden because they didn't argue the burden properly in their opening brief or reply, Your Honor. Seeing no other questions, I'll dispense.
Thank you, counsel. Carefully pick the sentence you have time to.
I just want to say two very quick things in my 8 seconds, that the government has now made several arguments here that not just aren't in their brief, they're actually different from their brief. And I would ask this court not to give those any weight. The one thing I do want to stress about the anime is a massive subject. Mr. Morrow said he downloads cartoons, slice of life. He denied specifically downloading animated child pornography. That was such an important thing that I think the court took for granted, that if you say you download anime, that's what you mean. And on prejudice isn't just are you exposed to images. It was the way it was used by the prosecutor 3 separate times in closing, including in rebuttal. So given the harm we know comes from prior bad act evidence, this evidence can't be deemed harmless if you think it was admitted in error.
Long 8 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.